Hi, and thanks for joining us on Live with Squawky. I'm your host, Val Kelly, otherwise known as Squawky Voice, and I'm so excited about our show. My special guest today is Anthony Sardina. Anthony is a professional Toronto-based voice actor, director, writer, and producer who has used his great versatility to bring to life many cartoons, video games, web series, audiobooks, and commercials over the last 10 years. Anthony has a background in radio, television, new media, and film production. It's an honor to have you on the show today, Anthony. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Anthony and I met this past September at the VoiceOver North Conference in Toronto. It was such a well-organized and great event. Someone introduced us one morning over coffee or tea, and we had such a great conversation about our voiceover careers. Can you start out by giving us a bit of background as to how you got started in the industry?
Sure thing, yeah. And just a quick note, the person who introduced us was Drew Froman, the director and writer of Tattoo Sound Recording Studios here in Toronto. And yeah, no, VO North was created by Dervila Trainer. She's the founder, also another Toronto person. It was a great chat. But in terms of how I kind of got started was before YouTube was a thing, I was given like a little gooseneck microphone where my buddy was like, hey, here's this microphone so we can play Counter-Strike together and you can talk and all that. Okay, sure. Never used it once. But what I did use it for, there was a sound recorder on my computer. And I started getting this crazy idea of, you know what? I got some free time. I'm young. I'm not really doing anything. What if I just did some improv shows where I just would record myself doing voices and sketches with different characters and stuff like that? And I think I was about like 13, 14 when I did that. And I would play it, and then I would listen to it over, and then like if I wanted to add music, I would have to put the microphone up to my stereo, and then I'd have to play the music really loud off of that, and then I have to record that. And it was just, if anyone's ever used a Windows or Microsoft sound recorder, it's the most basic bare bones recording thing ever. And eventually I just kind of started doing it more and more. I spent like a summer just making these really crudely improvised 30-minute long episodes, sketches with different characters and stuff like that. And then eventually YouTube became a thing. And I was seeing a lot of other people were starting to do similar things where like taking animations and then dubbing over them. One of the most famous ones was one of the X-Men with this video called I'm the Juggernaut Bitch. And I loved it, and I thought to myself, wait a second, these guys are doing the exact same thing I'm doing, except they're doing it on video on YouTube, where who knows how many thousands or millions of people can see, and I'm doing it and putting it on this little CD where like I'm going up to people in the park being like, hey, do you want to listen to this 30-minute thing I did? They'd be done after like 2 minutes. I figured, all right, I might as well try this. So like I downloaded some episodes of SpongeBob and Dragon Ball Z and Spider-Man and X-Men and all that stuff. And then eventually I got some of my other friends from high school to come over and we would dub over stuff. Just have like a really dumb good time because I was also learning how to edit as well during that time with Sony Vegas. So like I would take a clip and then I'd play it and then I'd have it like record and then I'd say something and then my buddies would be like behind me just giggling, trying not to laugh as we're like improvising. Because I don't know, it just felt a lot more real and it felt a lot more genuine. And like as I kept doing that for like a couple of years, a buddy of mine messaged me on MySpace like, hey man, I've been seeing the stuff that you've been doing and it's really cool, we should meet up one day and like talk about doing this professionally. And I was like, hold on, people do this professionally? And so we met up at a voices.com conference in Toronto, like, oh my gosh, maybe 10, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just kind of like explained to me, there are actually other people online. There are different forums where people are kind of doing the same thing you're doing. People are doing fan dubs. People are doing demo reels. People are doing critiques and stuff like that. And I think I could like help introduce you to some of those people. And then if you want, I can help you like make a demo. I can introduce you to my agent and all that stuff. And then like we can get the ball rolling. And if you want, like you can get started on your career. And I was like, well, shit, this is exactly what I want to do now. And then so he helped me make a demo. He introduced me to his agent. And I went on these different forums, the Voice Acting Alliance, which unfortunately is gone, the Voice Acting Club, which is still around. So like if you're looking to get into trying to get your feet wet into the voiceover scene, Voice Acting Club is a very good website to go in because a lot of people who did start off there are now big professionals doing stuff in like anime and cartoons and commercials and all that stuff. So like, it's a great resource as well. And I have to thank my buddy Mac for kind of getting me started with all that. And since then, I've been with my agent since 2009, 2010, and I was able to book stuff from them. And I'm also still non-union, so I'm able to book stuff here and there as well. So that's kind of just how I really got my started, doing dumb, stupid YouTube videos that eventually kind of just like blossomed. And I'm sure there are a lot of people as well who also followed through with that.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's such a great start. That's so interesting. What have some of your biggest successes been so far?
Well, I'd say 2019 was by far my best year when it comes to voiceover. I booked my first commercial. It was a national commercial as well. The story behind that is actually, it's kind of funny. I was in Burbank at the time, around late April. It was my birthday week, and I was like, you know what? I'm tired of everything being cold in Toronto. I'm going to go to Burbank. I'm going to go see some friends. I'm going to spend the week there, and I'm just going to hang out and chill, and it's going to be a good time. Me and my buddy were going to the gym, and I was just checking my phone for emails, and I got an email from my agent being like, hey, you got a commercial for Acura, and they need it by 3 p.m. Eastern Standard. And I looked at the clock of his car, and it said 11:30. And I was like, oh shit, that's Pacific. Oh my God, I have half an hour to, okay.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm just like, hey man, I was so mad too. I was like, I just wanted to go to the gym. I didn't want to have to like, oh, okay, whatever. And so he turned the car around. I went into the booth. I read the script and I was like, okay, here's the thing, okay, done. And then we went to the gym. Fast forward to like a month later, I get an email back from my agent. Hey, so they like your read and they want to bring you in, but it's going to be a demo. However, since you're non-union and this is a union gig, you're at the point now where you have to pay extra or you have to pay full price for permits. You could either pay for this permit and do a demo that may go national, or you can just not do it. Money wasn't a problem or anything like that. And so I asked my buddy and I was like, hey, what do you think I should do? And he's like, are you able to like pay for it? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, then do it. You never know. And I'm like, all right, sure. And so I go there. I redo it. They have picture. So I'm following picture and all that. I record it. And then they're like, okay, cool. All right. So we need to make sure that you're available next week just in case this goes actually, we go with you. And I'm like, I thought this was a demo. And they're like, oh, yeah, but there's a good chance that you'll be official. And I was like, okay. And so... it was funny because I had a tattoo appointment that same day. So I was like, hey, tattoo artist who's in the city for this convention for only 2 days, I got to cancel. Sorry. I ended up feeling sick like the couple days before. So like I started medicating like, no, I can't be. No. Then the second time I come in and I record, yep, it's official. This is national. You are now the national voice of Acura Canada for cars, for digital and television. And I was like, oh my God, imagine if I was like, no, that would not have happened. Yeah, that was my first ever commercial. It was pretty dope.
Yeah, that's an awesome story. Holy cow. I'm glad you did it.
I'm also very glad I did it. Another really big success that I think kind of almost dwarfs that in terms of like how people respond is I booked a semi-recurring character in Paw Patrol.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I play Traveling Travis, who is literally Steve Irwin. They were like, all right, he's Australian, he's a traveler, and he has his own traveling show. And I was like, okay, so just Steve Irwin. And
that is so cool.
There's a little, some clips of it, actually. It's on Netflix right now, season 7. If you look up A Wrong Way Explorer, he's in, that's his debut episode, and then like a couple episodes after he returns.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Congratulations, Paw Patrol. That's huge.
Oh, thank you. It was season 6, not 7. It was really cool. It was really, really interesting in how the performance and like what I've been trained to and what I've been like told in terms of a lot of cartoons and animations nowadays are looking for like a lot more grounded, a lot more subtle, a lot more real when it comes to like the read. So like nothing big, nothing explosive or anything like that.
A lot more natural than it used to be, less cartoony and more real life.
Right, yeah. If you listen to stuff from like the 90s, you see like a lot of people are like, yeah, we're big and explosive. But then when you kind of like change them or anything like that, like DuckTales, for example, the DuckTales of the 80s is like big and goofy.
Yeah.
But now it's like everything's a lot more grounded and more centered. yes, there are like the big explosive goofiness, but that's only because the character itself is already put to 11.
Right.
So because I come from a place of doing fan dubs and like parodies and all that stuff and comedy, everything is going to be like big and la-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so like Traveling Travis was able to be that of like, whoa, oh, I can't believe it's going to be crazy. Yeah. Whoa. Like he's literally Steve Irwin. That's all I was just like, okay, so he's Steve Irwin. That's literally all I was doing. And then I just listened. I had a lot of other Australian friends. So like I tried to remember like how they said certain things and how they said certain words. But because it is children's animation, you have to be careful not to make the accent too ununderstandable, because usually it's like little kids listening to it.
Yeah, so totally.
You have to be slow, you have to be clear, and you have to like hit those right notes, because like at the end of the day, you're kind of teaching them something. So like you have to make sure like those notes that you hit are like the lesson points, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want them to go like, we can't understand you. It's a tough mixture of playing the character really well, but then also making it understandable for little kids so that they can get the lesson out of it. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, splitting the difference is what I hear a lot of.
So how about some challenges that you've had in your career?
So my biggest challenge is I'm non-union. I don't want to go union because over the past 10 or so years, I have cultivated this list of clients from like video game casting directors, animators, production companies on YouTube, production companies in real life, and they all look for like non-union work. And if I join the union, I can no longer have any of that. If I were to Paw Patrol and Acura, for example, those were all union gig. Every time I get a session or I book a character on something, I have to pay a permit for each session. And depending on like if the character's principal or, you know, like a guest or if it's national, the prices all differ. So I have to pay in order to do it. But the money I get back is worth enough that it's fine, that it works for me. But I think, you know, the current climate that we have now, I think being non-union is a lot better, especially if you already are set up with a home studio, so that way you can record stuff and all that. But no, the union, I know in the States there's FICOR, where it's like, where you can be union and still do non-union stuff, but you don't get like the union perks of, or I could be wrong. I'm not 100%. Like, I think like stuff changes all the time, but no, we don't have that here in Canada. It's kind of a one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, people do play both fields, but I don't like that idea of like using a fake name. Cause like at the end of the day, you want to be proud. You want to be able to put your name on something that you did. You don't want to have to hide behind and not be able to promote it or anything like that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm not saying I'm for or against the union at all, but I think that there's a lot of non-union work now. And I think that's been such a big debate amongst voice actors in the United States, at least. And I'm sure you said in Canada as well, is that you have the option of going FICOR in the United States, but then you don't get voting rights. I'm not sure if the other exact details of that, but I know that a lot of people have chosen to just stay non-union because there's a ton of non-union work. And it's good for people that are non-union, you know, kind of controversial topic, I think, as far as union versus non-union, but you have to just go with what's best for you in the end.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I did contemplate a lot of, do I want to just go union? Because like a lot of animation shows are union. And like, what if I'm at a point where like I can't afford to like pay a permit for every time I record something and all that and this and that. And I thought about it. And at the end of the day, I just feel like the money won't always be there. But that doesn't mean that things won't be done in a professional sense. You still will get paid. And as long as you're true to your rates and as long as you're able to say, this is my rate. And if they say, oh, we can't afford that, then you say, all right, unfortunately, I can't help you. But I do know people who probably could, or I know places that you can look.
Yeah, absolutely. So as an actor who has performed in a large number of animated roles in video games, Do you have a technique or method for getting into character before an audition? And if so, can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. One little note that I saw that somebody had mentioned was reading the description as the character. When you get sides, hopefully sometimes you get like a description of like a character, then you get like little traits, you get little notes of raspy, this age. You get like the whole Bible of the character of this is how they feel about this person. This is their background. This is that. This is that. Just find those little like adjectives, those words that kind of like draw out. This character had a bad childhood. He's an orphan. His parents abandoned him. So like, okay, so trust issues. All right, cool. So like being able to read between the lines, being able to like go in between those letters and kind of open them up. Ah, this is what it actually means. It's like in Scooby-Doo when they go and they unmask the villain or whatever. And they're like, let's see who this person really is. And it shows like, oh, this is what it means. It's kind of similar to that. So being able to find those little notes, those little ticks.
Yeah.
And also another thing, too, that can really help is when you do see those, maybe try to remember like a character that you read about or like a person that you know or a person that you heard about that kind of maybe reminds you of this character. So that way you can kind of borrow those traits and use it into your read and then thus create a whole new character. Because like chances are the casting director doesn't know Uncle Joe or that he like burps every 2 minutes or like has this really distinct laugh. They don't know that. But you know that, and you can take that, because if it makes you laugh, there's a good chance that it'll make the director laugh. That's also in case if the character is a funny character. If not, if serious character and the director laughs, eh, you know, like little victories here and there. Just being able to find those like little tiny words, being able to like pull out and like understand the character and trying to like match maybe your like background or your past or things that you kind of gone through where it's like, oh, I can relate to this. Oh, I can relate to this. Let me pull this from my trauma box and being able to kind of bring that character to life because you had to take a mirror. You had to take the sides, which is the mirror to yourself and see a whole new reflection of a brand new character and create this piece of art. Multiple reads with different takes in mind and you know, like, because sometimes when you record for a character, you know, you'll say, like, I'm doing two takes. So that way there here are two different things that you can, like, choose from. And you can choose either A or B, or maybe you can find something in between. And when you do those sides, make sure that, like, whichever traits that are mentioned in those characters, they are kind of brought in each different line. So, like, a different emotion or, like, a different feeling or, like, a different, like, sense is in those lines because it then gives you a variety.
Awesome advice. What character have you played so far that you would say is most like you? And then which one is least like you?
There's a character on a YouTube series called Epithet Erased. This dude is called Indus. And he's just this like really big, dumb, jacked goofball. And when I got the sides for him, the very first thing was, oh, he's Patrick Warburton. Literally, he's just Kronk from Emperor's New Groove. Okay, cool. I got this. And I just did like a semi Patrick Warburton, semi more so me read on the take for the character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's yelling all the time. And he's just like a, hey, I'm going to do this because it's really nice. Like he's like a dog almost in the sense of like, I'm just going to be a swell good person. Even though the person I'm working for is evil, I'm still going to have honor with a big old smile on my face. After I recorded for him, I did like a 4-hour session. There was just so much screaming in the first episode. It was bad. I don't think I was prepared. I straight up, like after each hour, I was like, I need tea. I need throat coat. Let me.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. You ever get those where like you're reading and your throat feels raw and you're too afraid to like spit in the sink because you'll be afraid to see blood?
Yeah, definitely.
Like it was one of those moments,
mm-hmm.
But luckily nothing bad happened. You know,
that's good.
I had some ramen and all that, but afterwards everyone was like, yeah, you did great, man. Also, it's really funny that we got you to play a jacked character when you yourself are so ripped. Ah, thank you for lying to my face, but, you know, you're welcome. Is another guy called Heckbane, who is from a fighting game, local gang called Mighty Fight Federation. So, like, if any of you listeners are into, like, fighting games and Power Stone, then, you know, check it out. It's in beta. It's really good. He is a jacked gym bro hellhound. And all this thing is like, yeah, bro, we're going to go. We're going to lift it. We're going to get ripped and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And like me and a lot of my other friends who go to the gym, we always like talk to each other about like, yeah, bro, yeah, bro, like shit like that, you know, just to, you know, have fun and like make fun of ourselves. Cause like we get it. We understand gym culture and all that. It's,
yeah,
it's too funny not to make fun of it. One character I'd say that I am very most not like, I'm not going to say character because he was a real person in this YouTube series called Super Science Friends.
Ooh.
The person's name is JP Morgan, who's like a real life bank person man in the States. Yeah, he's got a
real life bank person man.
I mean, I don't know what his official like CEO, like banker, like I don't know exactly what his title was, but like I saw it. They were like, hey, do you want to play this this real life banker? He's just like an old guy. He's like, oh, yes, I like money. But I played him in a miniseries that they did where it was called The Snake Pit, where it's similar to Shark Tank. For those of you who don't know what Super Science Friends is, Super Science Friends is a YouTube series where a young Albert Einstein, Nikola Tesla, Charles Darwin, Sigmund Freud, they're all like superpowered beings employed by Winston Churchill to like go through time and all that to like beat up Nazis, but also like teach different scientific and historical events and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a mini series called The Snake Pit where Nikola Tesla each time goes to all these different historians. So like JP Morgan is there. Thomas Edison is also there.
Oh, wow.
He just shows off his inventions and they're all like, yeah, no, that's bad. Like we're out on all that stuff. And then when he leaves, they're like, actually, you know what? That's a really good idea. Let's steal that. And like, which is like the Tesla life, right? Like,
yeah.
No, but also give me.
You've definitely played a lot of really cool characters. So that's a lot of fun. As an actor, writer, director, and producer, what and or who inspires you?
I went to school for broadcasting and film, mainly because after high school, I went to do an internship at a community college radio station, and I really loved it. And I kept telling them, like, hey, if you guys ever need, like, voices for your, like, radio stations and all that, I can do it. And they're like, yeah, okay. And then the last day, they humored me in being like, hey, yeah, why don't you come and record something? And I was like, okay. And I did it. And they're like, oh, wow, you're really good. And I was like, yeah, that's what I've been trying to tell you guys. But also, we would have bands come in to record their albums, a lot of different indie bands. So, like, a lot of solo acts who pretended to be Bob Dylan and all that. I would help set up the producer with miking all the instruments and all that. And then like when the summer would come, I would go there every day because we just had more and more bands coming in every day. And I did this all on my free time. They'll ask me to record stuff. And so like I would go and I would set up the stage. I would like talk to the producer. He'd be like, hey, you want to like try and mix something? And I was like, okay, sure. And I got a lot more respect from it in terms of the background of like how much work goes into creating something. You can be at like top of the line, or the toppest of the top of the line, or the belowest of the below of the line, regardless, you are treated with the same type of respect. Even if you're a director or you're like sweeping up after the set's all done, everyone is equal. We are all in this to create something. We are all in this to make something work. We are all cogs in this machine. And if one cog in the machine breaks, then the whole thing is broken. And that was kind of what I was taught and what I learned from it in terms of when it comes to like making or creating something, being a part of a process, even if it's like in the background of a process of something. Back when I was a kid, my uncle made an album in 97 called Once Upon a Pan. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Just it's music, whatever. But like as I kind of grew up and I started to listen to it more and I started doing more like writing and directing and like producing and even editing, I realized, holy shit, there's so much that goes into like just creating something. And it kind of gave me more respect towards the craft of creating something. And even now, like we see people who are like making their own stuff, they're always posting like, here are my stills. Here's the animatics and all that for this little 30-second short that I'm doing that took me 6 months to make. It's crazy how much you see of it, and it's the iceberg effect. You only see the tip of the iceberg, and you think, wow, that's really big. You have no idea how much bigger the iceberg is underneath.
We're living in somewhat crazy, ever-changing times. Having a home studio is essential now for voice actors. What would you say are some key components to having a broadcast-quality home studio?
As long as the space is treated, that should be the number one concern. if you have the greatest microphone in the world, it's still going to sound bad. It's going to sound echoey, and it's not going to really do a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of people are, myself included, are very fortunate to have something called a whisper room.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's just like a 4x4, so like you can come in, close the door and all that, and it sounds fantastic. Don't immediately invest in a whisper room or anything like that.
Yeah.
If you're not already like booking a lot more, because like if you invest all this equipment but not have you yourself physically be ready for it,
right,
then it's not going to really matter. You'll just have a bunch of like fancy toys.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense to invest in all that if your acting skills aren't what they need to be to book the type of work you're trying to book, for sure. What's the best piece of industry advice you've ever received?
The best industry advice, doesn't matter what industry you're in, don't be a dick. Treat everyone with respect. And here's one quote that was told to me that I forever and forever, networking and not working is just one letter away.
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
Yes, a DJ told me that.
That's awesome. How about the worst advice you've ever received? I think this one is always like really interesting because there's a lot of bad advice.
The worst advice is give me money and I'll make you a star.
Yeah.
You got to kind of be careful out there. There are a lot of sharks. There are a lot of people who kind of like take advantage of people who are just like, I want to try and get into this. And so I'm going to look up this person and they said they'll give me a lot of money and all that. And,
yeah,
you know, sometimes those people who are teaching either aren't ready or just kind of notice that there are people like looking to like spend money, and it could be really icky and disgusting. That's why if you are going to go into like coaching or anything like that, it's always important to ask people that you trust, who can you refer me to, or what can I do? Let me look up some Google reviews and stuff like that. Like, it's very easy to fall into that trap, especially in like such desperate times where like, I need to do this now. I need to do this, that. Like, no, stop, take a breath. Tomorrow can happen. You just got to make sure you do your research.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best ways for people, like you said, to figure out who to train with is to get referrals from other people that have been in the industry for a long time and that have worked with these people. And then there's a reputation there instead of somebody you just randomly find on the internet and you don't know anything about. That's never a good idea. Because there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of people just willing to take your money, especially now. This is hard times for a lot of people. So everyone just be really careful about who you choose to work with.
Yeah, snake oil salesman of VO.
Exactly. What are three goals that you have for yourself to accomplish in 2020? I love this one because I like to hear what people are trying to work on.
My three goals of 2020, number one, survive.
Yeah.
I want me and my Same. Family and my friends to survive 2020. It just kind of seems like a write-off right now.
Yeah.
And that's not like a survive in VO world. I mean, like, survive in real life.
Yeah, just survive, like, period, yeah.
At the end of the day, yes, it's important to, like, be productive, but you can't constantly be productive when you're forced to, like, not go outside. Take some time for your mental health. Survive. Another goal I want to accomplish is I want to finish wrapping up the final episode of the show that I'm running on YouTube called FF7MA. I've been doing that since about like 2015, so like a good 5-ish years now, and I'm trying to get it done before the end of this year, and once that's done, we'll see what happens. And finally, my other goal is I want to book a recording with a client and record with it over Source Connect now, because I've had it for a while and I've never bothered to try and use it because every other client that I've done is like, hey, we can use Skype or we can use Discord or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. But now that I have Source Connect now, which is, I guess, what a lot of casting directors, when they see that, they're like, oh, that looks fancy.
Yeah, I definitely think Source Connect or IPDTL or one of those types of scenarios is essential for everyone to learn. I think it's just not going to go away. Like, remember when they said, oh, ISDN is going away, and everyone that had or has ISDN was like, oh, okay, great, you know, because it's expensive. But if you've already had it for your whole life, then you're probably not going to get rid of it. But now all of these other things are taking over for it. So I think it's definitely something that people need to be trained on how to use, including the clients, because not everyone knows how to use it. So That's super important.
Whatever's the most simplest and whatever like gets the job done. The less whistles, the better, because when people see a lot of buttons, they get anxious and frazzled and like, I don't want to have to learn how to do this. Let's go on to something else.
Yeah, exactly. Just make it really simple and easy to connect. And I think people will want to use it because not everyone is very technologically advanced.
Yes, exactly.
So can you tell us something unique about you that people might not know?
I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but I grew up on a small island called Tobago of Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh.
And it's to give you kind of an example of how small this island is, you can drive around it in 4 hours.
Whoa.
Yes, I have done it. It's not a bad drive. When I was a child, I remember my dad rented me a tape of Charlie Brown Goes to France or something. Mm-hmm. Whatever it was, it had Snoopy and Woodstock, and like they were the main focus. There was barely any talking in that movie. I would then dub over Snoopy and Woodstock's voice as me and my sister were watching, and she's like a year younger than me, and I was like, I don't know, like 7 or 6 or whatever, and I would dub over and I would like talk over the cartoons, and my sister would be laughing and all that. And so my mom always tells this story of like, oh, whatever, like Anthony, like any other child would have been angry, but he just dubbed over the cartoons and like it was all fun and all that. So I think being in voiceover kind of was like a start for me. And it was pretty nice.
That's so cool. I didn't know that about you. So I'm sure a lot of people didn't know. That's cool.
Hey. So yes, I'm an islander.
Awesome. What methods have you used to market your voiceover career that have been successful?
I always say this, if you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter, because the thing that I love about Twitter is that there are so many like production companies and all that stuff will actually post out about like, hey, we're looking for new submissions for these characters, or like we're looking for some more people to be in this our roster and all that. So please email and please send us demo reels. Like even yesterday, I saw like 3 places, because like now every studio is like, hey, we need remote actors.
So, yeah,
like,
definitely.
Just, like, straight up being like, hey, here's mine. Mm-hmm. So Twitter definitely helps out. I have a Facebook page, but I don't really promote it or anything like that. Mainly because like Facebook itself is kind of like not so much dead, just more of a cesspool. I find Twitter to be really good. LinkedIn, I started paying more attention to. Whenever I have something voiceover related, I always post it on LinkedIn as well.
LinkedIn is great.
It's really good in order to find like production companies where like you can go out and like find like the emails and all that stuff of the different like project coordinators and whatnot. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is actually really good, but one thing that's actually helped me out is word of mouth. Hey, so like we heard from our buddy this, that you would do a great blank for this. Would you be interested? Or hey, we heard from this, or hey, we heard from this person. Can you do this? Can you do that? What's your rate? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that comes from just the best marketing tool for your voiceover career comes from the lesson of like the best advice to give is just be a good person. Just be nice, treat people with respect. And if you do something that's somewhat relatable, like if you have like a really cool car, someone will be like, oh yeah, you know who has a really cool car? This person. Oh snap, this person also does this. Maybe we should give them a chance. Always having just like one tiny little thing kind of about you that people remember you for will keep you in their minds more than anything that you can post on social media. Unless that thing that you're known for is posted on social media, because then at that point, people will see it, because then otherwise they'll forget. At the end of the day, just be a good person, and word of mouth helps out a lot. Don't spread rumors.
It sounds crazy. Almost every voiceover job that I've gotten has been from word of mouth. But I've booked through my agents and through pay-to-play. I would book on pay-to-play, but I think the coolest thing I ever booked was a short film where the director contacted me and said, I've been searching. It sounded sketchy, to be honest, but it's kind of a cool story. This director was doing a short film, and it was a live action film. And I was like, well, I'm not an on-screen actor. He's like, no. He's like, I just want your voice. He's like, I've listened to like thousands of voices. And when I came across yours, I was like, this is my voice for this character. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a weird line, you know? And then once I actually researched him and figured out who this director was based in New York City, I was like, oh my gosh, he actually really does like want me for this part. And it was such a great script. I couldn't say no. I did this character. It was like a talking teddy bear. And it was, and the whole premise behind the story was that this bear turned out to be someone's life coach. It was just a great story. I think the film was like 14 minutes. It didn't end up actually going to final production because they had some budgeting issues. So I'm hoping someday it will still get finished. But it was really cool and really flattering, obviously, to have a director contact you directly and go, I want your voice out of like all these ones I've listened to. Word of mouth really does work. And it's one of those things that if you do kind of create your own content and put your own stuff out there and the things that you do book, you make it available so people can access it easily, then people will hear your voice. And if it's something that they're looking for, they're definitely likely to contact you directly. So you have to be active on those social media pages and put yourself out there. It's the best way to get your name out there, to get your voice out there for people to go, oh yeah, this person does have the type of voice I'm looking for. So I think that's really great advice. And just to follow up on what you were saying about Twitter, because I'm very active on social media, and Twitter is absolutely fantastic for reaching a large number of people in a short amount of time. So yeah, you do have to take the time to build your following and things like that. But once you engage your audience and you interact with them on a daily basis, there are more people that are likely to follow you. And of course, you still have to be careful. You still have to filter it. You still have to make sure that you don't have crazy people following you. I go through periodically and get rid of some people that are like not adding value to my page, you know? But I think that's something that if people take the time to build it, they're really going to find it useful for building their clientele.
Exactly. Another thing too, I see a lot of people like Instagram. I just see like a lot of voice actor friends of mine will just, they won't like post anything like professional. They'll just be like, hey, here's me with my TikTok, or like, hey, I'm just like doing something, whatever. Like, I'm just a person. I'm just having fun or whatever. This
yeah.
is life. And like, you don't need to do that unless you're that kind of person who is comfortable with doing that.
I always give this advice is to kind of keep your personal life and your professional life separate. So for me, my personal Instagram is me as a voice actor, but I keep that page private. Like, I only let people on it that I actually know. And my professional page is my Mid-Atlantic voiceover page. So that's a public page so that people can see what's happening with my company and things like that. And I'll put my personal voiceover stuff on there as well. But I think you can kind of make that separation. And that way you can have the freedom to say like, oh, I'm going to put on Instagram maybe stuff I don't want everyone to see, that you just keep that page private. You just check your privacy settings and make it so that people have to request to follow you. You can do that on Twitter too, but I don't think it's useful to do it on Twitter. I think you can have that separation on Twitter, but I would probably never recommend making Twitter a private account because you won't reach as many people. You won't get as many followers. And I think people are kind of deterred by having to go through the process of getting approved on Twitter. Mm-hmm.
Plus with Twitter, at least, like, yes, you can be both professional and personable. Like, you can have, like, your opinions and all that and be like, I'm watching this sports game, or like, oh my God, did you see this, guys, or whatever? And then you can just talk back and forth. And you could also, like, post, like, hey, I was also in this thing as well, which is, like, cool, because then your friends who are following you can be like, hey, man, that's wicked.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how all the different platforms work. And I think each of them have different positives and negatives, and people just have to kind of decide which ones they want to use. But I think my favorites are Twitter and Instagram. And I like LinkedIn too. Facebook is not necessarily my favorite, but I use it sometimes when I have to.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you do training-wise to stay on your toes and relevant as a voice actor? Do you take any classes, or have you trained with anyone that you would like to mention?
Whenever I go into like start, I'm about to record something, I do a lot of like the basic like singing warm-ups of like, hey, like stuff like that. Like, I do like a big mouth, small mouth. So like, I'll make my face like really small, like I ate a lemon, and then like really open up just to kind of like loosen up my face and all that, loosen up my jaw, loosen up my vocal cords, do stuff like that. There was one thing that I actually learned called the Alexander technique, which is like a breathing technique, but also like a posture thing. That I tried doing it and I was like, oh my God, like I noticed something. For viewers out there listening, like just look up Alexander technique. It could be really good. It helps a lot with breathing and a lot with posture. It's very good. In terms of classes that I have taken, my very first class was Sunday Muse's class for animation. She was also at VO North. It was really nice to be able to meet up with her again. I think she was on the panel with Everett Oliver and
Ellie Ray and...
Yeah, she was. She's great. Yeah, I've definitely coached with Sunday as well.
All those other people are also fantastic. Kim Herden, Everett Oliver, and Ellie Ray Hennessy. I was taking singing classes with another voiceover friend of mine, Felicia Valenti, who is a trained opera singer here in Toronto and is also a voice actor. Look her up if you're ever looking for like operatic stuff or anything like that. We've been in a couple games as well, especially Mighty Fight. She plays two characters as well, so that's really cool. They're fantastic. Classes are very, very important. Coaches are very important. Acting classes, if you're doing animation, will help. I wouldn't say a lot more than voiceover classes, but it just, in terms of acting, because at the end of the day, it's all acting.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's on stage, in front of a camera, or in front of a mic. You have to learn the essence of acting, of feeling, of pulling from the past.
Yeah, I think acting and improv classes, I think improv is great for getting into character quickly, you know, and making quick decisions and learning to get out of your head. And I think acting classes are great too, because like learning the methodology behind formal acting is also really helpful to be able to pull from those techniques to just be a better actor as a whole. And I think a lot of people just don't get that training, and then they get a bit into their voiceover career and realize, oh, I need to take some acting classes so I can have a better basis for what I'm trying to do here, because it is all acting. And if you can't act, you're not going to make it very far. So what are you working on now that you're allowed to talk about?
Luckily, I'm able to talk about the series I'm on YouTube that I'm a part of called Meta Runner. We are in the process right now of recording season 2. You can find all of season 1 on YouTube. I play a character called Lamar Williams. It's from a production company called Glitch Productions down in Australia.
Oh, cool.
So whenever I have to record, I record at like 9 p.m. my time, which is like 8 a.m. their time in the future.
Oh, wow.
Now, it can be a little hectic, but right now we're in the process of recording a couple episodes. I've already recorded, I think, 4. So I got 2 more in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But
cool.
Other than that, I'm also still working on the movie of FF7MA, so that's kind of also been taking our time. And we're also releasing another series. I work for a production company called Team 4 Star. We did Dragon Ball Z Abridged. That was like our big thing, but that is now over. And we are working on a new thing called Unabridged, which is like our live-action comedy series. Those episodes are coming out right now, and so I'm working on making like GIFs and stuff like that for social media content for our Patreons and all that. So,
oh, that's awesome.
If you're looking for any new stuff to stream or to binge, right now is a good time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. What's your favorite type of character to perform and why? Can you give us an example of how he or it would sound?
I like to play the comedic roles. I don't like playing the lead character. I like to be like the secondary, like comedy relief. I'm very used to that in terms of like various like energies of like, oh, they're going to be here, but then maybe he comes around here and he's trying to be a little bit like something else. I think it comes from the past of having been on YouTube and having done like a bunch of like comedic stuff and like different parodies and all that stuff and working with people on different parodies. And it kind of forces you to play multiple characters at once. So like I'm able to like kind of bounce back and forth for a lot of those things. I also play the villain in a lot of things because naturally I can do like a deeper, more sinister kind of sound or whatever. Or like a very over the top, kind of like how Traveling Travis or Indus were, or like the more subtle caring friend of like kind of understanding of where somebody's kind of going through. Cause like in real life I am usually a lot of times the person that people come to when they have a problem or like they need an ear or a shoulder to cry on. You know, I'm always there kind of listening to people and like understanding and pulling in. I'm like, and I'm also on the receiving end of that as well. Cause you know, like everyone needs that kind of support. Everyone needs, even though they might show like, oh yeah, I'm fine. You always need to go out and like talk to people and all that. So like, I kind of understand that comes from acting, of being able to pull from yourself.
Yeah, definitely. If you have to laugh in character, what method do you use to figure out a character's laugh?
If there's a picture of the character, then you can kind of get a good idea. Maybe like visualize in your mind based off of the information that you're given from the size and from the script of how they are. And like maybe they're pompous, or maybe they might be like, yeah, okay, all right, then, like something like that. Like you know, it's always dependent on, like, the kind of character, and then, like, oh, if they're pretentious, or oh, if they're, like, gruff, or oh, if they're, like, big and, like, hardy, or, like, oh, if they're, like, really skinny and weaselly and stuff like that, things like that. Just adding little things that make it kind of more believable in that moment, it's almost like improv. And yes, a lot of directors will say, like, I want this thing on the script. But a lot of times, if you do something that the director does not see coming, and they go, huh, okay, you're on my radar.
Yeah.
That means when they are in production, there's a good chance that, oh, they'll probably do something that even I didn't think about.
Yeah, totally. Just something to set yourself apart, for sure. Can you tell us your website and social media handles so that people can get in touch with you if they choose?
Absolutely. My website is antfishvo.com. And my Twitter is also the same. Facebook is Anthony Sardina VO. That's S-A-R-D-I-N-H-A. Not a lot of people remember that. Anthony Sardina VO also on YouTube. But you can also find the show that I run if you look up FF7MA or Final Fantasy VII Machina Abridged. Just look up FF7MA. No one knows how to spell Machina Abridged. Not even. But I also have my own personal YouTube, Anthony Sardina VO, where I just, like, I'll post my animation reel is there, my commercial reel is there. I have a list of various other projects that I'm in, a lot of other clips from stuff that I've done. If you want to just check it out, go ahead. Give it a like. Give it a follow.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It was great to talk to you, and we wish you tons of luck in the future.
Thank you. Likewise. It was great. This was fantastic.
Live with Squacky is mixed and mastered by everybody's favorite voiceover tech, Uncle Roy Yokelson of Antland Productions.